today, so if you're here for PPT, come back tomorrow. with us today is representing Moses, representing Holmes is here, representing Kelly, representing Foster, representing Petula, representing Jewel, representing Hawker, representing Guayra. Today we'll be taking up four bills, Senate Bill 218, which we've already heard, and we have a few amendments to deal with, and then hopefully we can pass it out, and then some new bills, House Bill 384, dealing with fines and offenses, House Bill 419, repeal underground storage tank laws, House Bill 403, which is neighborhood electric vehicles. So if there's nothing else come for the committee at this time, let's go right into Senate Bill 218, criminal sentencing and polygraphs. We do have the sponsors here. I see Senator Bunday, Representative Newman, Senator Guest may not be joining us.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Con Bundy, Senate District P, Senator Guest does have a bill in another committee at this moment, so I think she is going to be delayed. And might I just say that the only changes that I'm aware of since the last time you heard this bill is that in the recent press, two new people have come to Alaska as sex offenders. One came from Canada and the other came to join our state troopers. Mr. Chairman, perhaps it's time to stop having Alaska be the sexual predator magnet of America.
Okay, very good. Any other opening remarks, Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In discussions that I've had with other members of the legislature, cost always comes up there, and I look at the cost to society and also the cost that the state currently spends on rehabilitation programs to victims at approximately $68,000 per victim, a total of $45 million. And then I also refer back to a discussion that I had back with Commissioner Tandesky when I asked him about are these the type of people who generally get involved in other types of crimes, which he stated yes, and that's in fact state that the people who do sexual assault crimes generally also are involved in approximately 11.75 other crimes. So by putting sex offenders away for a longer time, we're also taking criminals off the street that break into your home and do other violent crimes in a community. So it's kind of a 2-for-1 there, actually a 12-for-1, I think, if you look at it that way. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you for the opening remarks, and welcome, Co-Chairman Chenault. Okay, where we left off on this particular bill, let's see, we took up amendments 1, 4, 5, and 6, and amendments withdrawn were 2, 3, 7, 8, 9, and 10. So we should be ready, unless I'm incorrect here, we should be ready for Amendment 11. Does that sound correct?
That's right.
Okay. And Amendment 11, everybody should have in their packet, is it's a Hawker Cotula. So I'll go ahead and represent Hawker Cotula, whoever wants it. Represent Hawker, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment number 11.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number 11 gets back to the issue that we discussed at some length at previous committee meetings. It's the Section 3 of the bill. Amendment would delete Section 3 from the bill, and that's the provisions that are intended to provide where an offender is being sheltered by a friend and somewhere in the community, and so that individual that would be sheltering, harboring, knows where somebody is that doesn't go out and voluntarily report it could also be prosecuted. It's a very legitimate issue that, again, we've been around and around through that section. And, my concern, and I know the concern shared by Representative Cotula, who can speak well for herself, is that this section just doesn't quite get us to where we want to go to with it. It as written, the person could arguably be prosecuted even if they didn't know for not reporting where the person was, even if they didn't know where the person was. It's a very important thing for us to get at. I would point out it wasn't part of the original bill. It came in, which is the bill here is really about these increased sentencing and going into the polygraph world. So amendment number 11, for all the detail here, would delete section 3, which I would, we've had long conversations with the law people, the sponsors of the section, and would hope that we could come back in this body and address that that issue in a, in a separate method that could actually get us to where, really solves the problem and doesn't leave us with the vagaries here, the difficulties of interpretation, and then really some incredible difficulties in trying to prosecute anyone under that section.
Anything else?
I agree with Representative Hawker, and the problem is what we want to do is we want people to report where sex offenders are. We want them to be responsible, and certainly if they know where they are, they need to be sure that we know where they are. But the problem is the section, it's sort of like a double negative. You kind of should have, maybe should have known. You don't really know. You don't report, and you start going in a circle, and it's not integral to the rest of the bill. So I think that this section needs further work, and I think it makes it a stronger bill without it. Thank you.
Okay. Welcome, Senator Guess.
Thank you,
Mr. About the sponsors, any questions, concerns about Amendment 11?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Gretchen Guess, State Senator from District J. This was the section that was in my original bill that Senator Bundy was nice enough to put in. I think there are legitimate concerns, and I appreciate the representatives from Juneau and South Anchorage bringing those up, and I look forward, since I won't be here, to them working on it in the future. So I don't have any objection from withdrawing it at this time.
Very good. Any other, let's see, and if I understand how this all works, if this amendment passes, then the next two are not necessary. Is that correct?
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Okay, any other discussion on Amendment 11? Okay, I'll withdraw my objection. Any other objection? Seeing none, Amendment 11 passes. So would you like to withdraw Amendments 12 and...
Mr. Chairman, I will withdraw Amendments number 12 and 13, but it is always wise to come to Finance with a backup plan if you need it.
Okay. Any objections to withdrawing Amendments 12 and 13? Seeing none, then Amendments 12 and 13 are withdrawn. Okay, so we have the bill back in force as amended. We should probably spend a little time on the fiscal notes, which was one of the reasons why we kept this bill. We're obviously, unfortunately, this is a very, very bad crime that we're talking about here, but it does cost money to prosecute these folks. And I know the co-chairman wanted to kind of wait till we got finished with the operating budget, see if there was any money to fund this, and I believe there is. And do you have any comments on the fiscal notes, Co-Chairman Chenault?
Okay. There I have lots of comments about this bill, Mr. Chairman.
Let's see, there's a new fiscal note, too, just for the record. Department of Corrections, there's a new one, and also with Public Safety. Public Safety is a zero fiscal note, and Corrections... Their new fiscal note replaces fiscal note 9, dated 1/30/06. So you may want to take a look at those. Any comments on the fiscal note?
I'll make a couple of comments, Mr. Chairman. while I think that we realize that this program's going to cost us money in the corrections budget and other areas of the state budget, I think that we're amiss to not approve them. While I may not actually like the numbers, I think that we've got to get these guys off the streets. And as frustrating as it is for some of us to have these repeat offenders, and not only to have repeat offenders, but apparently to be having problems tracking these guys. I'd looked at another amendment, and I talked to all three of the sponsors, I think, about the amendment, and I will put it on record. I was going to put together an amendment for the death penalty, simply because I think it's egregious that these people are allowed to be on the streets affecting our children and the women and even the men in our state. And while I think that the program that we're talking about here is a good program, I just don't think it goes far enough. And I won't say out of kindness to the sponsors of the bill, I didn't put the amendment in. It was very hard for me not to. I've been affected personally by kidnapping of children, and it's not a good place to be. Fortunately, in my situation, we got my niece back, and she was healthy. But if it was up to me, we'd be a lot stricter on what we're saying here. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I guess that's my comments on this. I support it wholeheartedly because I would love to keep these people off the streets, and I know that that's the intent of the bill. So I support it, and while I may not agree with the fiscal note, I do appreciate the sponsors bringing this forward and trying to address the problem.
Okay, very good. Just for the record, we do have several fiscal notes. Fiscal note 1, Department of Safety 0. Fiscal note 2, Department of Administration is indeterminate. Fiscal note 4, Department of Law is indeterminate. Fiscal note 5, Alaska Court System indeterminate. Fiscal note 6, Department of Administration Public Defender indeterminate. Fiscal note 7, Department of Corrections with 0 and indeterminate. Fiscal note 8, Department of Corrections has 622,000 for FY07, and then it goes up in the out years. And then, of course, the new fiscal note by corrections, which replaces fiscal note 9. So there is several fiscal notes, again, as I already mentioned, on this bill. Representative Kelly, did you have a comment?
Just I think on the fiscal notes, we have to remember one of the things that this bill attempts to do. This bill attempts to place Alaska on the do not go there list for these creeps. And I think what we'll see is a cost reduction if Senator Bundy's right about what he said. And all three of them, Representative Newman and Senator Guest, mentioned the fact that this attempts to raise this to the fist high and say we mean business about these people. And I think after we fix a couple of them with this law, that the word will go out. And I think our costs have a potential for actually being lower in the end, because we do not have these folks importing to our state. And so if you haven't set the bar high enough, that's the only risk that I see, is if you didn't really get it up there, then we're going to go through some cost increases that will not have accomplished the final objective. So I'm very supportive of the bill, and we should declare war on these people, and this is a step in that direction, and I would submit 10 years down the road our costs may be lower in all ways. That is our human cost, and as a grandfather of 11, there's no place in our town for these bastards. This is a move in the right direction.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the subject of fiscal notes, I think maybe word said earlier, but maybe not exactly the correct phrase. It's not that I would disagree with the fiscal notes, but I am always concerned with increasing the cost of operations in the state here. But this is one of those cases where I think we've got part of our state system that we are fundamentally responsible for, that is suffering as much from deferred maintenance as some of our physical facilities and schools, harbors, type of things around the state that we've really made an effort to address in the past few years in the legislature. Our judiciary system requires maintenance. Judiciary from the top to the bottom requires ongoing maintenance. It's got to grow with our state. Unfortunately, we can't have a 1959 criminal justice system in the year 2006. The two are just incompatible. We have to step up to the plate and make some investments in this system, like we're doing in all the investments in schools and everything else statewide. I would also echo Representative Kelly's concerns there. I think that wars cost money, but the idea is to get to the other side and and ultimately be able to create the deterrent here that lets us be dealing with our own problems and not be attracting problems into the state that we end up then having to bear the cost of something that originated elsewhere. I think this bill is a important step towards that. I'm willing to make the investment. We take the risk of a lot of unknown costs here. Don't know what the prosecutions are going to be. We don't know, I've never seen an indeterminate fiscal note so indeterminate as the one that has stars across the boxes in every single box on the fiscal note. And that's criminal justice litigation. I think it's important to note that we don't know what this is ultimately going to cost us, but I do know that it's an investment that I'm willing to make. And so that I would also wholeheartedly support the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hawker. Representative Holt.
Thank you, Chairman. At risk of sounding like Judge Roy Bean, I think that the other co-chair is close to being right, and hanging tree might be appropriate in a lot of these cases. I was concerned about the fiscal note on number 8, and I'm concerned about the fiscal note is the fact that from all the things that I can read about those who perpetrate these acts of heinous crime upon our children, they're relatively incurable. And it's very rare from everything I've read, it's very rare that people change their habits when they abuse children. And we spend a lot of money trying to be nice and kind to folks, but at some point in time, incarceration is probably the best to keep them off the streets, and so I'd really like to look at these types of things in terms of long-term incarceration rather than we're not going to hang them than spending a lot of money trying to make them into something they're not.
Representative Holmes, would you like to ask Ms. Parker about fiscal note number 8? Or?
Well, I don't know that we can change it, Mr. Chairman. I just find these community programs that deal with trying to change sex offenders to be rather impotent, and I don't know if that's a good word to use in this case, but maybe to render them impotent might not be a better solution. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, very good. Comment, question, or Senator Guest?
Through the Chair, Representative Holm. It is the case, and it's been past testimony in the administration, that this is a best practices situation and with the polygraphs, but it has been proven in Colorado and in other states that the polygraphs tend to do two things. One, especially in the cases of people who prey on children, there's a pattern that they go through before they prey, and so this is trying to stop them from going down that pattern and creating more victims. It's also the case because of the probation section of the bill, that if they start doing things that they're not supposed to do, that the corrections system can rein them in. And we are talking, even though on the first degrees people may get out, on those second and third degrees, which are often molestation charges or sexual assaults that are pleaded down or attempted sexual assaults, that those people will be back on the street. So the idea is for 5 or 10 years, if we can keep them not repeating their pattern, then we can keep them from not having more victims. Is it going to cure them? No. Can we teach them not to hopefully go down and do those things that lead to more victims? We hope so. But as you said, we've never testified that it's a cure-all, but right now it's best practices, and the department will use it in cases where they think they're going to be successful.
Mr. Chair, if I might
Senator Bundy.
Thank you, and through the chair to Representative Holmes. I think, as you indicated, people are often involved in pedophilia, or I would oversimplify by saying miswired, crosswired, something. And they're also very good at kidding themselves and others. And it's been shown that the polygraph does help keep them from kidding others and perhaps themselves. And I would just share one example with you, a very unfortunate example, but true. A person who was a prime candidate for rehabilitation, was the model prisoner, did everything correctly, was in jail for incest, and had acknowledged that he had abused his children. I think three of them. When the polygraph was due, and part of the punishment and rehabilitation is a very extensive sexual history, when the polygraph was due, and by the way, many prisoners will help pay for their own polygraph, it turned out that not only had he abused his children, but all their teenage girlfriends, as he was in a position of power over people, several adult females who were unconscious, and a number of dogs.
Polygraph.
Without that polygraph, he would have been able to continue to kid us and himself.
On that point?
Sure. Go ahead, Representative.
Senator Bundy, was that an Alaskan incident?
Yes, it was.
Thank you.
Okay. I think we're ready to go here. Let's see. We'll need a special motion because the Amendment 11 is going to require a title change resolution. But we can go ahead and pass the bill out with a accompanying title change resolution. So the motion we would need is to move this Senate Bill 218 from committee with individual recommendations, attached fiscal notes, and accompanying title change resolution. Representative Foster?
No, sir.
So moved.
Okay. As amended.
As amended, yeah, sorry. As amended. Okay, any objections to moving committee, to moving the bill as amended out of committee with the accompanying title change resolutions and the various fiscal notes that are attached to the bill? Seeing none, the bill passes committee. Representative Foster?
I did want to thank the sponsors for all their work they did on this, and especially the staffs that did all the coordinating, and I know how much work that is and how conscientious all of you are, and I wanted to thank you.
Mr. Chairman, and we, on behalf of my co-sponsors, we certainly appreciate that. Would like to mention to the committee that tomorrow at 1 o'clock on the Capitol steps, there is a press conference slash rally, and certainly would like to invite all of you that have time and interest to join us. And close, I guess, by saying, in deference to what Co-Chair Chenault and Representative Kelly had to say, this bill will attempt to fix these problem people. I agree with you. I would use another connotation of fix if I had it in my power.
Amen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. Okay, let's go on then to House Bill 3.
Are you and I on
384?
No, I didn't.
Is that right? Yep, 384. Fines and offenses. Presenting will be Heath Hilliard, staff representative Anderson.
Here, you want a form? I think I'm going to see
okay, this is a new bill. We have not heard this yet. So, Heath, why don't you go ahead and introduce the bill to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, my name is Heath Laird. I'm staff to Representative Tom Anderson. You have before you today HB 384, amended judiciary, or the judiciary version. That's version I. Briefly, I want to talk about essentially the essence of the bill, which is amending our fines and fee structures for a number of criminal statutes. If I know that several of the judiciary members, staff members, have talked with me about the relatively extensive nature of this bill. And I do have with me today Mr. Dean Guinelli from the Department of Law, who is one of the primary drafters in association with our legislative legal department. In addition, I also have Sarah Gilbertson from the Department of Fish and Game, and I believe Lieutenant Jim Helgo from the Department of Public Safety from the Alaska State Troopers is online. This bill was brought to us initially by the Department of Public Safety and was much shorter in length. The department was asking the sponsor to amend a variety of fines and fees that are currently in statute. Upon introduction, the Department of Fish and Game came to us and said, we have a number of sectors that we believe are also relevant that probably need to be changed with regard to misdemeanor fines for misdemeanors. And upon that, the Department of Law and our legislative legal department believed that it was important to draft a bill that changed all appropriate references in statute, and thus the relatively extensive nature of this bill. I would point out for the committee's consideration that there were essentially two changes in the Judiciary Committee. There were originally two sections in the original version of the bill that referred to fines and fees with regard to violations of orders by the Labor Relations Board. And because of some confusion and some discussion with the Department of Labor and the Labor Relations Board, we believed it was probably better to remove those sections. So, indeed, we did remove those sections in Judiciary. In addition, Representative Grunberg in that committee made a conceptual amendment, which was to essentially tighten the title. And as you'll notice, the title in version I is quite extensive and does refer to all of the subject matter contained herein. So I guess with that very brief presentation, I'd be happy to try to answer questions or refer to the appropriate person.
Okay. I appreciate that introduction. I was just looking through the fiscal notes here. I don't see any impact. If we're raising the fines and fees, when have a positive impact?
I would believe so, Mr. Chair, but I would prefer to leave that to the appropriate departmental representatives.
Okay, very good. Any other questions for the sponsor? Representative Hawker.
Just a couple, if I might. There's a section in here that affects a section of code that was deleted by a bill that's passed this committee. I believe it was the chairman's bill that passed this committee and is through the House. Could address the appropriateness of continuing to revise a section of statute that has been in this body no longer in statute?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, I know that your staff had made me aware of that earlier, just prior to this bill hearing. However, I would also say that I guess my response to that would be we'd be very willing to appropriately amend this bill. However, the chairman's bill hasn't passed yet. So in the event that, for instance, it may not, I think it's still appropriate to leave that section in there.
Might have to follow. Second question.
Sure, go ahead.
Within the single subject rule here, would Co-Chairman Chenault's earlier comments about death penalty for certain pedophilic acts be within the single subject scope here?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, I'm not certain. My guess would be no, but I am not the drafter, so I couldn't say with certainty.
You know, he's looking for a vehicle.
We do have some people here who could probably answer that question. Representative Hawker, if you want to save that.
Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions for the sponsor? Okay, thank you. Heath? Let's see. As far as public testimony, we do have a... Well, I think these folks are just here for questions. Ms. Gilbertson, did you want to testify? Okay. And we do have Captain Al Story with the Alaska State Troopers. Annie Carpinetti is here. She could probably answer your question, or was here. Okay, Dean. Yeah, no, we won't go there. Lieutenant Helgo, of course, with the Alaska State Troopers, also for questions. Is there anyone who wants to testify? We're aware of? Okay. Anyone here in Juneau who wants to testify? Seeing none. Okay, so public testimony is closed. There's any amendments to be made? No amendments. Address the fiscal notes. Anything else? Yes, go ahead, Rich.
I'd just like to reserve the potential of coming back to an amendment after questions.
All right,
it'll hold it to the floor.
Okay, we'll come back to you, Representative Barber.
I guess I did have a question for Mr. Guarnelli.
Okay, Mr. Cornell.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Dean Guarnelli, Chief Assistant Attorney General with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law.
So, it's really the effective date of the act. It takes effect July 1st, 2006. For those who are charged with crimes prior to the effective date, if they were convicted, would they be subject to the penalties in this bill or the subject to the penalties in the law in effect before July 1st, 2006?
Through the chair, the answer is they would be subject to the existing penalties, the ones before the effective date of the act.
Even if they hadn't been convicted but just charged?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Guarnelli, this seems to be more in the sort of lesser issues, violations, fines, et cetera, but I do see we're dealing with, at least some Class A misdemeanors and those sort of. Would something that was in the felony class fit within the subject of this bill with a change of title?
Through the chair, I believe that that a single subject of fines certainly describes the bill as a whole, and so if the particular felony penalty was limited to fines, I think it certainly would fit. If it was beyond that and, dealt with jail time and things like that, then I'd want to think about it a little more, but it may still fit within a single subject. So I wasn't sure exactly what...
And if I may follow up and clarify.
Sure, go ahead.
Let me clarify a point, although I, earlier commented on Representative Chenault, but as a, more practical matter, in previous testimony, when we were discussing the increased sentencing bill that just passed out of here, 218, issue raised by Representative Curtula was that we've now got, presuming it was passed into law, we have a situation where, and I would have to rely on Representative Curtula to give me a better legal description, but situation where we have just increased some penalty for something within these child abuse statutes to where it is now actually greater than the penalty for murder 2, I believe. And again, Representative Kudrow, you probably understand the details better than I. Would this be a vehicle where we could correct that imbalance by raising the penalty for murder 2 to whatever it was that we just had included in the sentencing bill that just passed out of this committee?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, the Alaska courts give the legislature very broad authority to include within bills matters that fit within fairly, broad subjects. I could certainly construct an argument that that the single subject of this bill, if that additional language were included, would be fines and criminal penalties. I mean, I think that is a sufficiently broad subject that would include all the provisions, and I think that would probably be upheld by the court. I think what the courts are particularly concerned about is sneaking something in a bill, and certainly with a title that is as detailed as this and that would require a title change to include that, I don't think there's any danger of anybody being surprised. So I think the courts probably would give the legislature deference to do something along those lines.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Guarnelli. I appreciate it.
Representative Holt. Chairman. I'd like to take issue with that last statement. The Alaska courts do not give the legislature any authority at all. We have our own authority constitutionally mandated. The Alaska court system can only speak as with regards to what we set in place. So when I heard that, I thought, so many times the court system tries to change law and make law, and I think we should have the right to extend our authority as per the Constitution. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Holt. Okay, thank you, Mr. Grinnell. Okay, if there's no other questions, let's see. Does anybody want to address the fiscal notes? Mr. Grinnell, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I guess on the fiscal notes, these are all fines that are imposed by the court system upon conviction of some offense. In a lot of these, they are either called infractions or violations. The terms are now made synonymous in this bill, which I think is a good clarification of law. And those are offenses that cannot result in someone going to jail. There are other provisions in here that where the bill makes it clear that they are misdemeanor offenses because the existing statute does allow some jail time to be imposed. And again, that's a good clarification of existing law. But the bottom line is these are fines imposed by the court system. That money ordinarily gets deposited in the general fund so that no particular agency, unless they have some specific, receipt authority, is going to get any of that. Now, having said that, I believe that, and I don't know the existing status of it, but the Department of Fish and Game does have some authority to receive money from criminal fines to go in the Fish and Game Fund. But again, that is something that is subject to legislative appropriation authority, so it's not as though it's going directly to the department. It's going into a fund that the legislature has authority over. So I guess in that sense, I think the fiscal notes probably are accurate, but I suppose there could be some difference of opinion about that. But it doesn't go directly to the departments, in my view.
Okay. Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The difference of opinion. and I think the conclusion that there's nothing here that would mandate an additional expenditure of any sort, an anticipated zero or maybe an indeterminate. But what I don't see, and unless I'm missing something, is any indication that we would have an indeterminate revenue effect, because it would seem as we're changing these things that logically it would follow there would in fact be a change in the state's revenues from these fines and penalties. I'm not so sure that we would anticipate a change in operating expenditures as a result, because I think that could be a legitimate conclusion, that the court system will continue to operate, the judicial system operate as it always has, the labor and workforce guys, all these things will operate as they have, but their revenue maybe has, it may be a bit of a nit, but I would suggest that if we're appropriate in these, the revenues ought to be indeterminate rather than blank.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I can't really argue with that. I suppose that there's an underlying assumption that the number of these kind of offenses that get to the court system is going to remain the same. In other words, there's no additional deterrent effect, and that the judges are going to use the additional authority that this bill gives them to increase fines. I think that there may very well be an overall increase in the state's general fund, but the magnitude of that, I don't know that anybody's in a position to say at this point. So it's indeterminate from my standpoint.
Okay, yeah, good point. But I do think Representative Hawker is correct, and I think you've said it too, is that it probably more accurately would be indeterminate. We don't know how much, but there will be some change. We can make that change to the fiscal note, Representative Hawker. Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Cordell. Okay, Representative Hawker, let's see.
we haven't spoken. I think you're referring to, was it my House Bill 380 dealing with the diseased animals? If that passes, then that could have an impact on this. And then also, did you want to make an amendment now, or do you want to save it for the floor?
Mr. Chairman, your questions in sequence. Yes, Section 3 here, I believe, does reflect or further amend language that it would no longer be in statute if House Bill 380, your bill, had passed.
Correct.
And secondly, my mind working overtime there raised the question. I'm not sure what your intent is, but if your intent is to move this bill out today, I wouldn't stand in the way of that.
Very good. Let's go ahead and have a motion, though, to change the fiscal notes to indeterminate.
I might then, Mr. Chairman. I would make a motion that, as appropriate, the fiscal notes for House Bill 384 be changed to reflect an indeterminate source of revenues.
Okay. Any objection? Seeing none, then the record will show that the fiscal notes will be adjusted to indeterminate. Any other amendments, comments, questions on House Bill 384? If not, Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. I'll go ahead and move HB 384 out of committee with the attached fiscal notes and with individual recommendations.
Any amended fiscal? Okay. Any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 384 passes committee. Thank you. Okay, let's go on then to House Bill 419, repeal of underground storage tank tanks. This looks like it's the majority leader's bill. He has asked his trusty staff to join us, Karen Litster, and then also we have Larry Diedrich is here. So I think at this time then, since we haven't heard this bill, maybe you could introduce us to the bill and tell us what it is.
All right, good morning. Thank you. For the record, my name is Karen Litster, and I am staff to Representative John Coghill. Over the interim, Representative Coghill sent out a memorandum and asked any of the departments if they had statutes or regulations that were no longer necessary. DEC brought forward a request to repeal the Board of Storage Tank Assistance and the accompanying loan program. In your sponsor statement, it gave quite a specific history, but in brief, the Storage Tank Assistance Board was created in 1990 by HB 220 to oversee the grant that was also created. In 1999, the Storage Tank Assistance Fund was converted to an underground storage tank loan fund. Since that time, there have been no loans that have been applied for, and because of this, HB 419 is going to attempt to modify the end date for the board, which initially the sunset date was established as June 30th, 2007. As I said, no loans have been applied for since the inception of the loan program, and the board has not met since February of 2004. The bill also lists out the statutes that relate to the board, the reporting, the regulations, fees, the program and definitions, all of the respective administrative codes, and the orderly completion of the board's obligations and renumbering the instructions related to those statutes that will be repealed. As the chairman said, we have Larry Diedrich, who is the director of the spill prevention response, also from their finance section is Laura Beeson, and online we have the assistant attorney general, Brett Tostevin, which can maybe give you a little more specific detail or answer any of the historical questions that the committee might have.
Very good. You're actually repealing some of our statutes instead of adding to them, right? That's a little unusual. Representative Holm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Karen, is there a fund amount, a loan fund amount, that we're recovering or recapturing or putting back in the general fund? What are we doing here?
Before you answer, Representative Caulfield, if you'd like to join us, come on up.
Okay.
Pleased to have your presence. Okay. Go ahead, whoever wants to answer your question. Karen.
Through the chair, Representative Holm, I have asked the Laura from DEC Finance to come and speak to those financial matters specifically, as there have been some transfer of some funds and can make it very clear to you on where those monies are.
Thank you. We have room here. You can stay if you want. You want to leave, Karen? Okay.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Laura Beeson, and I'm an admin services manager with the Department of Environmental Conservation.
Okay. Did you hear Representative Holmes' question?
Through the chair, yes, there is zero available fund balance in that storage tank revolving loan at this time.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for the sponsors? Not, is there anyone online who wants to testify on this? I'm sorry?
Brian Toasterman is a
package. Brian Toaster. Oh, Breck. Is it Breck?
Breck?
Yeah, Breck Toasterman. Okay. Mr. Toasterman, did you want to testify or were you available for questions?
Mr. Chairman, I was just available for questions.
Very good. Is there anyone else online that you have? Okay. Anyone here in Juneau? See none. Then we'll go ahead and close the public testimony. Any amendments? Representative Wire.
And maybe it's for the sponsor a question.
I'm sorry?
Sponsor, can I have a question?
Sure, go ahead.
If somebody has an underground storage tank, and they just didn't do anything for years and now they want to do something, is there any... Do they go to the, they used to call the state and say, I need assistance, and they got this program, and they got somebody from D.C. to call them and talk with them, or now they're just out there on their own, no program? Is that really what we're doing here?
The loan program will go away, but D.E.C. will still deal with underground storage tanks. They still have a fee for registering. So the regulation of underground storage tanks is still going to be in place.
Somebody snooze, you lose, sort of.
There hasn't been any use of this for many years, and so I think most of those who had to be replaced and who were under financial duress have been taken care of, and now the regulations require certain types of tanks and monitoring to be in place, and so to have this fund, there is no longer there, and so I thought we should make our statute books a little thinner.
I agree. Thank you for refining this. Representative Caulfield. Any other questions? You have a question? Okay. Let's see. I think if there's no questions, no amendments, the fiscal note is zero. Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. It seems strange. I voted for this back in 1990. I remember well a lot of the gas station people in Juneau and Anchorage and Fairbanks, they couldn't afford to move their tanks, and they needed these grants, and they had to comply with these new regulations, and that's why this program was set up. So it seems strange now that I'm voting for its demise, but I understand it, and I wanted to thank the sponsor for his foresight on this bill. I'm going to go ahead and move HB 419 out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Any objections? Seeing none, Costello passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chicago.
Vehicles, that looks pretty innocuous.
Yep. Okay, our last bill for today, or for this morning anyway. We're making good time here today.
I haven't been here, that's probably why.
Yeah, that's why, yeah. Okay, House Bill, this is interesting, House Bill 403, Neighborhood Electric Vehicles. First we will need
a motion to adopt a blank substitute.
Okay.
We have a motion to adopt blank committee substitute House Bill 403 version 24LS-1299/I dated 3/31/06 LaCarp as the working document for the committee. Any objections? Okay, none. Let's see. This is Representative Thomas's bill, and we have his trustee staff here. Ian, is that right? Ian, yeah. Fisk. Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
Fisk,
Chairman.
If you'll tell us what this bill is all about. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ian Fisk, staff to Representative Thomas. Well, this bill is about low-speed vehicles. In state affairs, we actually amended all the references to neighborhood electric vehicles to low-speed vehicles, just to conform with federal law. But the most common question that I get when I mention this bill to somebody is, oh, you're talking about golf carts. And that's why I provided the little brochure that we just received in the mail from one of the suppliers of this, or manufacturers of this type of vehicle. They're not golf carts. They are defined in federal law as vehicles that must have four wheels, and they must be capable of a minimum speed of 20 miles an hour, but they're limited to a maximum of 25. And although there might be a souped-up golf cart that would fit into that range there, there's other requirements that the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration has. They have to have a lot of the same equipment as any regular vehicle, such as headlights, front and rear turn signals, taillights and brake lights, reflectors. They have to have an automotive quality windshield, mirrors, parking brakes. They have to have a vehicle identification number, seat belts, and they have to meet some testing requirements that are spelled out in federal regulation. The regs, the federal regs that govern these, this type of vehicle were developed in 1998, and these are now legal in 36 states. So this bill would make us number 37, Mr. Chairman. And they offer several advantages, obviously some fuel efficiency, zero emissions, and they've become popular with, you know, people in retirement communities, for instance, or pretty much any application that's like a low range, low speed kind of neighborhood application, if you need to run to the store, that kind of thing. Needless to say, these vehicles present an opportunity for people to drive something that is more efficient for short trips. So DMV would like the authority, which this bill provides, to register and regulate this class of vehicle. And with that, I'll take any questions you or the committee might have.
Okay, very good. I think we do have some questions, and also we do have Dwayne Bannock with the DMV online, as well as Carl Springer. Now, let's see if I understand these. These are small electric cars. I mean, they're just like any other car. They don't exceed 35 miles an hour?
Mr. Chairman, they are limited by federal regulations to not go more than 25 miles per hour. But they cannot be used on a road where the posted speed limit is more than 35 miles an hour.
Okay,
I should have made that clear in my testimony. But they can't commingle with any kind of high-speed traffic or typical boulevard traffic.
So pretty much they would just be limited to neighborhood roads?
That's correct. And I should also further clarify, sir, that they would be permitted to cross an intersection of a road that has a higher posted speed limit as long as they're still ending up on the other side on a road that's 35 or less.
And how do they do in the snow and ice?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure. I haven't had the opportunity to test drive one of these little things yet. I don't think they make four-wheel drive versions, so it's going to be a seasonal thing for starters.
You can probably put chains on them, I guess.
Okay, Representative Kelly and then Representative Holm.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to answer your question. As a person who in 1970, from 1970 to 73, test drove an electric vehicle in Fairbanks, the best person to talk to about how they perform in the cold would be my wife, Sherry, since the last time she went with me at 40 below in that thing was when she had to walk in heels from the railroad industrial area to the nearest warm place, which was about a mile and a third.
and talk about a furious woman. So, I support this legislation. I'd like to make that clear. But they have some shortcomings in Arctic climates. It's a shame that in 33 years they haven't come a little closer to completely whipping that problem. But I've had all, if you're ever interested in it, I can tell you a lot of experiences with an electric car. Trip to Harding Lake and back is just about possible. But the last 6 miles you have to walk.
Again, I don't know anything about them either, or I don't know anything about them, but it seems like they could be a kind of a pain on our roads if they only go 25 miles an hour, but if they're limited to neighborhood roads, I guess that's fine. President Holt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I was a little concerned about the occasional use type provisions on the speed. Farm equipment and so forth and so on can be on the highways even if it's over 55, as long as they appropriately stay on the side of the road and those types of things for occasional use. If they were going to be used on a daily basis, there are, at least in our town, and I'm sure there is in other towns around the state, highways or roads or boulevards or avenues that go from 25 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour to 40 miles an hour to back to 30. I mean, so you can't go down the road because it keeps changing every so often. I was wondering actually under this provision or this law, you would have to not use those boulevards or those avenues. Is that correct? Because the higher speed limit would preclude you to do so.
Yeah, that's correct. And I thought of that too. There's plenty of examples of that probably in every community where with changing speed limits, someone's going to have to be careful to not then violate the law by finding themselves in a 45 zone going 25.
Well, the reason I asked that question is there's no way. I was just thinking Pegger Road, Lathrop, Cushman, I could go right down there. There's no way to get there from here without having to go out on these arterials that are that are a higher speed limit than 35. So
Representative Holm, I understand what your concern is. I mean, like, for example, here in Juneau, if you live in Douglas Highway is a 40 zone in there, and you'd kind of be stuck over there. But one provision in the bill says that a municipality may, by ordinance, further restrict the operation of low-speed vehicles within its jurisdiction. And we added that in the State Affairs Committee just to make it clear that municipalities are going to have their own particular circumstances, and they should be able to, you know, while they're not going to be able to change the entire nature of the vehicle, they should at least be able to work on making it applicable to their town.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Holm. Representative Schnell.
A couple things. I was looking at this. It says in here that they do not require a valid driver's license and they're restricted to top speed of 25.
Thank you, Representative Chenault, through the chair. We corrected that with this bill. I think that was drawn from a constituent who was originally interested in this, and the owner and user of this type of vehicle is going to be subject to all of the same provisions. It's in Section 5. They must be subject to all the traffic and other laws applicable to operators of passenger vehicles.
Yeah. I know that Representative Thomas and Representative Croft are on this. I mean, are there any particular communities that have said we want these? You know, and maybe it's a rural area, or maybe it's an area not like Anchorage, but maybe it's Homer, for instance, and, you know, that they have a tight enough knit community that these vehicles, I don't know how far they'll go on a charge, or apparently not to there and back, but almost. You know, so, I mean, is there any particular communities that have talked about this and would like to see it specifically for their communities?
Yes, sir. Representative Chenault, through the chair, the community of Skagway first approached Representative Thomas with this idea, and it is a very, I don't know if you've been there, but it's pretty tight little spot in there between the mountains and the ocean, and their speed limits there make it an ideal place for this type of vehicle, especially with the large number of tourists that come through. There's a gentleman there actually we have one person who I believe is online from the Skagway Development Corporation. You have their letter of support, and
another one of the folks in Skagway couldn't make it to testify today, but they originally approached us, and we've heard from a gentleman in Anchorage and in one in Ketchikan as well. So I can't say it's exactly a groundswell of, it's not going to change the world overnight. I don't think my boss is going to be driving one anytime soon. Okay. Wow. You could probably fit one in the back of his truck, though.
He's probably like me in certain ways. These things look pretty small.
Okay,
Representative Barber. Well, you said this, I think, Mr. Chairman, that this applied to electric vehicles, but there's electric doesn't appear anywhere in the bill.
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock. The reason, I think it's the vast majority of these things that are being manufactured are electrically driven, but federal statute or federal regulation refers to them as low-speed vehicles because there are other technologies that could come into play here that would make it apply. We just wanted to make the bill conform with the federal regulation, but the vast majority are electrically driven.
Rubber band.
So then, but your section E in the first section says it meets the standards for this state or the federal government. So if it's compliant, if you want it to comply with the federal government, why have or? Why not just meets federal motor vehicle safety standards?
Through the chair of Representative Wyrock, I did not catch that, or no one else did in previous hearings. That's the way the drafter put it together.
Representative Wyrock, would you like to save that for an amendment as we progress here? Okay. Representative Kelly.
Just you say may further restrict. What if a community wanted to say that we think these things are okay and we're going to let them go in 55 zone? What if they wanted to make it easier?
They would, through the chair, Representative Kelly, they wouldn't be able to make it to supersede the max that's in there now. I mean, they could restrict where they could be used and so on to conform with.
It seems to me that some municipality had certain conditions where they had a short stretch of Skagway may have a very short stretch of 55. I haven't been there in a while, but wouldn't it be better to, instead of saying restrict, modify or something, so they actually could go either way? It's just a thought. And then the second question, if I might, Mr. Chairman, is what is there in the way we are currently doing things that would protect or prevent this rig here, if it showed up, from not being able to do what you want it to do in Alaska? Does the current law not let this happen?
Chair, Representative Kelly, yes. And DMV wanted to clearly delineate, because it's a new class of vehicle, and Mr. Bannock is online from the division if you'd like to ask him too. But I think what they wanted to do was clearly allow that this completely different type of vehicle here from anything that we're used to is going to be legal.
Just curious, because we've got, Mr. Chairman, if I might, one of the reasons for not putting electric in there, we've got hybrids now, quite a few of them in Alaska, where you've got a battery electric vehicle with an IC engine to recharge the batteries and give you some more flexibility, and they work fairly well. But like I say, having test driven one, I couldn't take it anymore. I didn't see anything that prevented that from happening, and I'm generally supportive of this, but I just wondered if it's clearly prevented now, or if I showed up with one of these, is there really anything stopping me from using it?
I'd like to phone a friend, Mr. Chairman, and ask Director Bannock to clarify how the division has been looking at these.
Okay, yeah, very good. I'd like to have him also address Representative Wyrock's question that he had. But I think before we go to him, let's go ahead and take any other questions and then take public testimony. There is one person from Sitka, I believe, not Skagway. Representative Hawker, yes.
Excuse me. Just in the questions, three questions. I pegged off, I think, items that have been identified here, but this bill, as it's constructed, essentially is a state mandate again on municipalities, but allows then the municipalities, if they want to further regulate these, to have to regulate them. Did you contemplate making this a municipal opt-in. You know, we want to put some sidebars in state statute, but that we would empower municipalities to authorize the use of these in accordance with their own regulations. So the default is no. And then the individual municipalities that may or may not wish to allow these vehicles on their streets can turn the switch to on.
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, we didn't really contemplate that. I think the idea was to take the direct opposite approach.
And I be honest with you, that's kind of opposite of my general philosophy. I really prefer to let decisions be made locally rather than have the state mandate decisions maybe driven by one small community on all the rest of the communities in the state. And perhaps, you know, may force communities, then they have to take action and spend all the money and do everything else to say, oh, wait a second, you guys just turned that on and we don't want it. So, but I'd ask that to be considered. Second point was exactly the one Representative Weirach brought up. In that section one where you may not refuse to register one of these animals that meets the state's requirements or meets federal standards, I believe that ought to be an and. I think we, as a matter of state policy, we ought to minimally say these animals must meet the federal mandates and then essentially it would be any other vehicle safety requirements that we would choose to set here in the state, rather than giving the feds primacy in this issue. And then thirdly, this one, we've got to take, it's a section one again, and it needs to be taken in the context of the statute section where it appears. Okay, this would add a subparagraph E to the statutory section 2810.041, which is grounds for refusing registration. And it lists a whole bunch of things you can refuse a registration for. And that's, the application contains a false statement. The applicant doesn't give the information. The applicant isn't entitled to an insurance certificate of title, isn't entitled to the issuance of a certificate of title. Basically, you don't own the thing. Vehicle is determined to be mechanically, the whole list of things. And it's good read, good things. We don't want to be issuing. But then, this would add a subparagraph E that makes a blanket statement that the department may not refuse to register a low-speed vehicle that meets, it's got to be as a passenger vehicle, it's got to meet the safety and equipment requirements for passenger vehicles, and then presuming we go to the and it has to meet federal motor vehicle safety standards. So it would seem to be then saying that it would seem to override the rest of these prohibitions, so the department must register this vehicle, period, regardless of whether it's mechanically unsafe, the registration suspended, the applicant isn't entitled to the title. Does, in fact, this language override all of those concerns? It would seem to me that it would.
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, I think that's a good point that you've raised. I think as far as the safety elements in that statute, it's going to have to meet because of the fact that you've got, I don't know, there's probably some cases where it wouldn't meet it, but you're going to, this type of vehicle is going to have a whole bunch of requirements that I spelled out that are required by the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration as far as safety. As far as title and so on, I think you might have a point, and I would again defer to Mr. Bannock. On your second point, I don't think the sponsor would have any issue with eliminating or and replacing it with and to give the state the latitude that you spoke to.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would absolutely concur with the points that I was just citing at random here. I think safety is considered specifically here, but all the rest of these prohibitions, for example, the required fees or taxes have not been paid, may be a grounds for not issuing a registration. Well, it would seem to me here we're saying we don't care if they pay the taxes, you got to do it anyway. So,
yeah, good point, Representative Hawker. And let's have Mr. Bannock address some of those.
Before we go to him, let's go ahead and take public testimony. And there is one person from Skagway. I'm sorry, my sheet here said Sitka. Michael Katze.
Hello.
Hello, Michael.
Hi, how are you? This is Mike Katze. I'm Executive Director for the Skagway Development Corporation.
Right, welcome.
Thank you. I was actually going to read a statement in support of this, but I think Ian's covered most of the points that I was going to make. I'd like to emphasize the fact that these vehicles will not be suitable in all conditions and in all communities and in all instances. What they do is give Alaskan residents the opportunity to use an alternative form of transportation, one that's cheaper and efficient, and that is specifically manufactured for short-haul runs. In the majority of runs that most people make are less than 10 miles a day. I, for instance, work 10 blocks from home. I can come down in my low-speed vehicle, 10 blocks, park it, and go home again, plug it in overnight, and I'm good to go. This isn't meant for, long-distance hauls or people who have traveled a considerable amount of distance between work or school or whatever it is that they're doing. I don't think this is just something that's going to fit in Skagway. Of course, we don't have any 55-mile zones until you hit the Canadian border. So for us, it fits in really well. But there's a lot of other southeast communities and a lot of other rural communities where these vehicles are going to fit in just perfectly. So all we're asking for is an opportunity for some people to have these vehicles. I mean, they do meet federal safety regulations, and they are legal in 36 other states. And I don't know why Alaskans should be held back from having these vehicles as well. And they do go about 25 miles, I think, on a single charge. It's a 120 charge. You can just plug it into an outlet at home or wherever you are. So they are easy, and the maintenance costs are fairly low. And I think that really should be allowed to have each municipality make a decision whether they will be allowed or not is going to create a hodgepodge of rules and regulations around the state. I mean, either they're safe to be on the state's roads or they're not. And I think municipalities can further restrict their movement with their use within a community, but I don't think municipalities should have the right to ban them outright. If it's like anything else, I mean, if a truck or a van has been deemed by the state to be allowed on all state streets, I mean, why not give municipalities the right to ban certain trucks or vehicles or makes or models? You end up with a hodgepodge of different rules and regulations. But I'd like to see the allowed use the use allowed in the state and municipalities further restrict on certain routes and areas. That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Any questions for Michael? Say none. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Is there anyone
You're
else?
Welcome.
Anyone else who wanted to testify?
Okay. Anyone else here in Juneau? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the public testimony. Now we'd like to go to questions. I see. Dwayne, are you still with us?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Yes, sir, I am.
Good morning, Dwayne. Thank you for joining us. I'm sure you've heard about these electric cars and you're all excited about them.
Yeah, indeed. Yes, sir.
Okay. Let's see. Do you have any, before we go to questions, do you have any comments on what this would do to your business?
Very briefly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dwayne Bannock, today representing the Division of Motor Vehicles. We have talked about this bill. We've heard about this situation from customers across the state of Alaska, and the Division of Motor Vehicles has made the decision, and I concur with the decision, that these types of vehicles, specifically called LSVs, or the other common name for them is Neighborhood Electric Vehicles, NEVs. I choose to call them LSVs because that's their federal designation. That's a different class of a vehicle per se, just as there's a class called motorcycles. Motorcycles have their own class. And then within motorcycles, there's on-road motorcycles and off-road motorcycles. So much like your birth certificate that each and every one of us got that day we were born, There's a birth certificate, per se, that comes from a manufacturer. In the business, the lingo is called the manufacturer's statement of origin or the manufacturer's certificate of origin. And there's some language that is specific to either one of those documents. I'll be brief and call it the MSO. There's language printed on the MSO that gives direction to the Division of Motor Vehicles by that manufacturer. For instance, if we were to buy a brand new Dodge pickup truck today, there would be language on the MSO that says that it conforms to the federal regulations pertaining to pickup trucks, et cetera, et cetera. These LSVs have a different set of language, and it says this low-speed vehicle conforms to federal regulations under Title 49. A motorcycle would also cite something that's different, because clearly motorcycles don't meet the same federal standards as that Dodge pickup truck. And then there's some motorcycles that, while they still have an MSO, are specifically designed not to be on the road. So at the Division of Motor Vehicles, we take a look at that original document, and we say, for instance, we will license and title and register a on-road motorcycle, but we will not do an off-road motorcycle. We will certainly do that Dodge truck, but today, because there is a definite legal definition between a vehicle per se and a low-speed vehicle, I concur with the division's policy that it is a separate type of category. Thus, notwithstanding some of the excellent comments of some of the earlier representatives' comments, we thought that by making the additions in sections 3, checkout 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, we would fully accomplish that, and then we would cheerfully be in the business of licensing, titling, and registering these vehicles. With that, sir, I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Well, you're a cheerful bunch. We do have some questions. Representative Kelly.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the question that I had then on whether we are prevented from doing it, I think your answer was yes. And I guess my next question after that would be, in the other 49 states, are there other states that just license it under the passenger vehicle like they're doing now on the hybrids?
When I did, through the chair, sir, when I did some research on this, I believe I found one state that did not have specific language either to have them or not to have them that did register them. Clearly, that would be the exception.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hawker, question? Okay. Okay, Dwayne, did you you heard some of the concerns that were mentioned earlier? I think Representative Wyrick and Representative Hawker both wanted to make some minor changes to Section 1, changing or to and.
Well, actually, the way Representative Hawker put it was maybe different than the way I had heard it. What I had heard the sponsors say is they wanted the passenger vehicles to conform with federal motor vehicle safety standards. What Representative Hawker said was that they he thought it should be state supremacy. So on line 6, page 1, while he would have put by this state and meets federal motor vehicle safety standards, I thought what the sponsor intended was having it set for passenger vehicles by federal motor vehicle safety standards. So maybe Bannock can testify on that.
Mr. Bannock, do you have a...
Mr. Chairman, I'll do my very best. Okay. First, I'll pass the buck a little bit. Section 1 wasn't ours. It is my professional opinion that those issues pertaining to the safety and equipment, et cetera, are addressed perhaps in its definition as a low-speed vehicle, because low-speed vehicle has its own federal definition.
So it's really not a state thing. It's complying with federal standards?
Through the chair, I concur with that. Yes, sir.
So would it be correct that it would be passenger vehicles by federal motor vehicle safety standards?
Representative Wyrock, you're at page 1, section 6.
No, excuse me, page 1, line 6.
I'm sorry, page 1, line 6?
Yes.
I believe that would be technically correct.
Okay. And then the other question, Mr. Chairman, was whether in the definitional section, notwithstanding the comment by Representative Kelly, which is probably the better view on what the vehicle is, do you limit it to, the sponsor again indicated that the low-speed vehicle was to be an electric motor vehicle. So should you add low-speed vehicle means an electric motor vehicle or leave it means a motor vehicle?
Representative Wyrock, through the chair, it was my opinion that we strike electric from there, not because I have any insight on a propane-powered vehicle or a hydrogen-powered vehicle or any other type of vehicle that would fit into this category, but because the name of it, it is not under 49 CFR, I just don't know that that's necessarily the appropriate thing to do. We'd have no heartburn with it being in there. However, I would only tell you that if we do put it in there as an electric vehicle and someone comes with a solar-powered low-speed vehicle or something, we'd have ourselves a bind.
Not in the barrel.
Yeah, I guess, Mr. Chairman, then is it really the sponsor's intent to limit it to electric vehicles?
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, no. I hope I didn't, I don't know how I gave you that impression, but
we originally had it in there and then we took it out.
Okay.
In the State Affairs Committee, because we wanted to follow Mr. Bannock's advice.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just add a point to that. Sure. Currently in America, there are electric vehicles that are not low-speed vehicles. It's important that we look at the title low-speed vehicles as a verb, as a noun, not as a verb, because the big Dodge truck could drive slow, but that doesn't make it a low-speed vehicle. But rather, as was testified to, there's hybrids on the market today. Those are not specifically low-speed vehicles. They're just alternative-powered vehicles. So that's why I think that we may be putting ourselves a little bit in a box if we tried to call it an electric vehicle, because there are electric vehicles that are capable of 55 miles an hour quite easily.
Very good. Representative Hawker has a question.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dwayne, good to have you with us today, as always. On this topic of the definition of a low-speed vehicle, I think, you know, we've sort of fleshed out the energy source issue, but you've also got in here a four-wheel restriction that it must have four wheels. I presume that means no more and no less. And I don't pretend to be an expert, but certainly, you know, colloquially, you know, things that stick in my mind I've seen on this have had more that I think might fit into this generic category have had more or less than four wheels.
Mr. Representative, yes, sir. Through the chair, we took the four-wheel. While there are three-wheels and six-wheel units out there, again, we referred to 49 CFR, and all of their references there include four-wheeled vehicles. So today, by federal definition, a three-wheeled vehicle would not meet the federal definition of a low-speed vehicle.
Okay, thank you very much. And I appreciate that sometimes we've just got to draw our boxes.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Bannock?
Okay. I think any questions for the sponsor while he's still here? Public testimony is closed. I think what I'd like to do, I don't see any major opposition to this bill. I think Representative Hawker's brought up some points, as well as Representative Wyrock, that we should address and come back with a CS. Probably can't do it this afternoon, but next time we meet and we take up bills, hopefully we can come back with a CS and keep this bill moving for you. So Representative Hawker, if you and I and Suzanne can get together, Representative Wyrock, if you have some suggestions, and then we'll continue on with this. Anything else for the sponsor while he's here?
Saying,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, thank you. Okay, so let's just hold on this bill for a day or two while we make some minor tweaks to it.
That does conclude our work for this morning. Appreciate the committee giving us your morning to take up some bills. We're getting stacked up here a little bit. Would like to, again, we were not able to get any consultants today, so we're going to use today as a day to get caught up on bills. And this afternoon at 1:30, we have some more bills to address. House Bill 57, which is the sale of state land to adjacent landowners. House Bill 445, Alternative Energy Grant Fund. House Bill 470 is a mandatory use of headlights. This has no fiscal note, and again, I'm not sure why we're hearing it, but we have to hear it because the Transportation Committee waived it out, and it has to have one committee hearing. So if you're wondering why I'm using or taking up your time to take up this issue, that's the reason. And then House Bill 493, school construction bond reimbursement. So those are the four bills on our agenda for this afternoon at again at 1:30. Is there anything else that you committee needs to take up this afternoon? If not, then we will stand adjourned until 1:30 this afternoon.
Okay. I just never saw it. I got a nice look at it, and then I'll give you a call.
I doubt I have any.
The number is 450. I don't need to take the sheet.
Okay.
We should just sit around the top.
Good deal.
Yeah. I just talked about growth.
Yeah. I'll trust you. That.
Cool.
Okay. I'll drop it back to you.
Well, thank you. Oh,
that's the same one. Huh?
That's
the same one.
Yeah.
Okie dokie.
I
did a lot of doodling.
Starting to get so we get these everywhere.
I know.
Here, that's the way you do it.
Well, actually, what happens is representatives get too busy to understand.
He did, but then he didn't really bring them up to Dwayne, so I don't know.
Right. Basically, he wants
to come and talk to you in your office or something.
Only if a municipality or whatever, a town or something passes an ordinance can DMV license these things.
Right.
You know, the 20s will shut
that's
down.
One. Do you remember that scooter law that Halford passed
like
last year?
Weeks. Yeah. Yes. And how's that coming through the Senate?
Same discussion.
Two or three committees? Four?
In that scooter law.
Yeah.
Same.
That's
right. Why should the state be mandating that these things be registered if the municipality doesn't have an ordinance? You want it to be licensed.
Yeah.
Well, that's a state agency.
You know, and rather than piss them off,
it should be allowed that these cars can go on state roads.
Exactly.
So I thought, well,
unless a municipality restricts them.
And then Lou Anfield.
Or state road or not. You know, they can be used unless the municipality restricts the use. We give them broad authority, and then the municipalities can restrict them.
I had five.
Doesn't stop them from passing.